We want to continue our series this morning on unlikely heroes of the Bible. I'm so glad. One of the things that thrills me about Bible study is that God took time to record these little tidbits about people that we would never give much thought to unless we choose to slow down and look at their lives. And they're bit players in the grand scheme of things. They're not people like the apostles or David or some great king of Israel. They're just little bit players that had an encounter in life and they made the best of it. And they made a huge difference. We've talked about Paul's nephew in this series. We talked about the man who let Paul down in a basket over the wall at Damascus. And this morning I'd like for us to open our Bibles to Jeremiah chapter 37 and 38. And look at another unlikely hero of the Bible. We talked about this man in Bible class before, but I wanted to use him as an example in this sermon because you probably have just read over his name and given him very little thought, but his name is Ebed-Melech. Say, Ebed-Melech, who in the world was that? Well, we see him in Jeremiah chapter 38. And he's mentioned again in chapter 39. But I'd like for us to set the setting first, to set the stage, to give you a little bit of background of what is taking place. And then I wanted you to see how he came on the scene. And though there's just a couple verses that mention him, he did a great thing. And while we may not be in the same situation that he's in to be able to do exactly the same things, we do have opportunity to do in principle the heroic things that he did. Here's the setting. Jeremiah chapter 37. Jeremiah has been prophesying for a long time. Well, you go back to chapter 5 and chapter 6, he's been calling them out for their wickedness, and if they don't walk in the old paths, wherein is the good way, and walk in it, you'll find rest for your souls if you do that. And they said, we will not walk therein. And he said, well, we need to blow the trumpet and warn the people about the incoming, the impending invasion and trouble. Somebody has to listen. And they said, we won't listen either. You can preach all day and we're not listening. That may give us some indication why Jeremiah said, man, I am so tired of preaching because I preach to you all and you don't listen and I'm held up to scorn and ridicule and no one responds. And so at one point he said, I quit. I'm not going to preach anymore. Nobody's listening to me. I'm tired of this. And he quit. But you remember the text says that the word of the Lord built up within his bones as a fire, and he couldn't contain it anymore, and he had to speak for the Lord. Well, it's gotten to the point where they are almost now about to be overrun by the Babylonians or the Chaldeans. And they have besieged the city of Jerusalem, and they have circled the city, no food and all this kind of thing, and things are getting rough inside. And here's what happens. The Babylonians hear that the Egyptians are coming up to help Judah. And they're not quite ready to tangle with the Egyptians. And so they leave. And when they leave, Israel thinks they've won. Judah thinks they've won. Those in Jerusalem. And they're just relieved that they've left. We're not going to be destroyed after all. We've done it. We've withstood them. And here's the prophet of God, the wet blanket, who says, you haven't done anything. They're coming back. Oh, yeah, they heard that Egypt's coming, and they left temporarily, but as soon as Egypt's gone, they're coming back. And everything that the Lord prophesied about us being taken into captivity and destroyed and over, it's going to come to pass. And he said, and I am so certain about that. I'll tell you this. If all that were left were men who were wounded, they could take this city. Because God has made a promise. Well, he continued to preach, and one day he left outside of the city walls to check on some property, and his enemies used that as an opportunity to accuse him of treason. They said, what are you doing out of the city walls? You're defecting. You're going to the enemy. And so they arrested him and they brought him in and he was put in prison. And King Zedekiah eventually calls for him and privately says, "Now, Jeremiah, tell me, what does the Lord have to say?" And Jeremiah says, "I've been telling you, we're going to be destroyed. The enemy is going to come in and ransack this city and there's no hope for us." So Zedekiah just takes him and puts him back in prison. But that message that Jeremiah kept preaching, the men come to the king and say, "Listen, he's telling everybody that we're doomed. And man, we don't have very many people that have a positive outlook right now as it is. And he's just disheartening everybody because he's telling them that we're going to be destroyed. And we can't have this kind of message. We're already feeling defeated and we got to shut him up." And so it wasn't good enough just to have him under arrest. They said, "We need to kill him." And the king says, "Well, go ahead and do what you need to do." And so what they did is they took Jeremiah and they threw him in a cistern into this pit and he sank in the mud. We know that story. We remember that. He was the prophet that they threw in this well and he sank down in the mud and they just left him there. They weren't going to feed him anything and he was going to die. Enter our unlikely hero, Ebed-Melech. Chapter 38, look at verse 7. "Now Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian, one of the eunuchs who was in the king's house, heard that they had put Jeremiah in the dungeon. When the king was sitting at the gate of Benjamin, Ebed-Melech went out to the king's house and spoke to the king, saying, 'My lord the king, these men have done evil in all that they have done to Jeremiah the prophet, whom they have cast into a dungeon, and he's likely to die from hunger in the place where he is, for there's no food in the city.'" Ebed-Melech heard what had happened to the prophet of God. And he was so convicted, so moved by what he saw. You know what he does? He goes to the king and says, "This isn't right. This is wrong." Ebed-Melech had a sense of boldness about him that he wasn't about to just stand by and let something happen that wasn't right. We need that kind of boldness in our lives. Are we, when we see things that are unjust, do we just, "Boy, that's not right," and we just say it to ourselves? Or do we interject ourselves and say, "Wait, this isn't right. This needs fixed"? I can tell you this much. You know, yesterday, Charles Cochran at the graduation, Charles preaches in Chattanooga, and he brought up the passage in Acts chapter 4 and verse 13 and challenged our graduates to live by this, to be like Peter and John, who with boldness proclaimed the message of Christ. And when people saw them, they knew that they had been with Jesus. We need to be Christians like that. We don't need to cower. The Bible tells us, Paul told Timothy, "You didn't receive a gift that was to be used in a timid way. God has called you to power and courage, and get rid of the timidity and start living for your Lord." We need to sometimes be reminded of that. Are we bold in our proclamation of Christ? There's too much at stake not to be. There are souls that are dying and headed to eternity apart from God, and we're afraid of hurting feelings. We're afraid of people thinking that we're, I don't know, radical, just over the top, you know, whatever. I don't know. But surely we need this sense of boldness. This, man, you're just a servant. Ebed-Melech was just a servant. He was made a eunuch in service to the king. He understands how cruel that these men can be. Who is he to walk to the king and say, "Listen, what you guys have done is wrong. Not just wrong, it's evil." What courage. We need that kind of courage. We need to take a stand. And there's risk involved when we take stands, but we need that kind of courage. Micah chapter 6 and verse 8 is a passage that talks about, you know, the things that God requires of us and what it is that we really need to be. And you know what he says? He says we need to be a people who love justice. And as Jesus was rebuking the Pharisees in Matthew chapter 23 and verse 23, these guys were religious. They were tithing of these little seeds, and they were making sure they gave a tenth. They were doing religious stuff. And he said, well, yeah, it's not that you shouldn't be doing that, but I'm telling you, you've got to love bigger and better things than that, like justice, mercy, and faith. Listen, justice is a big deal in the eyes of God. And I don't have the luxury to watch injustice and to stand by or just walk around it when I have the ability to interject myself. We should be a people who are known for our desire for justice. When we see injustices in our society, it shouldn't be the world that leads the march for justice. It should be the church that leads the march for justice of mankind. This man saw an injustice, and he said, I cannot stay quiet. I'm going to the king, and I'm going to tell him this isn't right. And folks, when we see injustice in our daily lives with our friends, our coworkers, whatever it is, listen, we need to stand on the side of right and be bold and speak. And it may get us in trouble, and people may not like it, but we need to stand for justice. That's a big deal to God. Ebed-Melech did just that. Not only did he do that, but look what else we see about him. Look at verse 7 and 8. As he engages in this conversation with the king, he spoke out, and here's what I find interesting. He spoke out while he himself is in a mess. You see, he's heard the prophecies of Jeremiah. The enemy's coming. We're all in trouble. And in the midst of his own trouble, he's able to look to Jeremiah and say, yeah, I know I'm up to my neck in a mess myself, but this isn't right with him. He was able to look beyond his own circumstances and get involved in the lives of other people. Sometimes when things go bad in our lives, man, we just close down. We circle the wagons and we can't look outside of ourselves, and we're just woe is me. And everything is just like about me. And Ebed-Melech could have taken that position. Do you realize what's going to happen? The enemy's coming. I'm going to lose my life. It's about me. But he got beyond himself and he said, well, it's also about him. I know I'm in a mess right now too, but this isn't right. We need to be a people that can look beyond ourselves to the needs of other people. Matthew chapter 22, how will people know that we're the disciples of Jesus? By our love for one another. Love your neighbor as yourself. Romans chapter 12 is a great chapter on just like how to live a godly and holy life. And it's about involving others. Philippians 2 and verse 4. Don't just look out to your own needs, but look out to the needs of others as well. I'm impressed that he could have just wallowed in his own self and circumstances, but he got outside of himself and looked out for the needs of others. Listen, I know this is a paradox. It doesn't sound like it's right. It doesn't sound like it makes sense, but it's true. When your load gets heavy, if you want to lighten it, pick somebody else's load up. You may say, well, wait, I'm already burdened with my own load. I don't need somebody else's load. Yes, you do. That's exactly what you need. As we bear another person's burdens, our loads don't seem so heavy anymore. Jesus said it's more blessed to give than to receive. We'll find happiness and freedom as we reach out to other people and help lift their loads. And we feel good about ourselves and we feel good about what we see that we've accomplished in other people's lives. It's what we need. You know, when we ignore the others and we just focus on our own burdens, they just seem to get bigger and bigger and bigger and they get out of proportion. This man looked to the needs of another, though he himself was in trouble. Let's do that. Don't bury yourself in your own grief and in your own circumstances and heartaches. Get out and live for others. Here's a third thing that I see from this man. Not only did he see what was taking place, but his concern led him to action. Look at what it says in verse 38, or chapter 38, verses 9 through 11. My lord, the king, these men have done evil, he said. You remember that? And then here's what the king said in verse 10. Well, Ebed-Melech, take from here 30 men with you and lift Jeremiah the prophet out of the dungeon before he dies. So Ebed-Melech took the men with him and went into the house of the king under the treasury and took from there old clothes and brought rags and let them down by ropes into the dungeon to Jeremiah. So here's what Ebed-Melech does. He not only saw the problem, but he enlisted himself to fix the problem. We need to do that. Don't just be a pointer. Don't be one of these Christians. I've known people through the years that, oh, they're good, really good at identifying things the church needs to do. You know, we ought to be doing this. And you know, if we were thinking, we would have done this. And what we ought to be doing is, and boy, they can just rattle off a list of things that everybody ought to be doing, but they're not enlisting themselves in any of those things. They're pointers. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that'd make a sermon. Could we figure out the kind of dogs Christians are? If we could, some would be pointers. Others might be shepherds. Maybe that may work. Shepherds, pointers, sitters. There's some sitters. I think so. I better stop. But you know, there are some people that just, all they do is they just point. They see a problem needs fixed and they point. Not Ebed-Melech. He pointed at the problem, but then he said, yeah, I'll be the one to fix it. And I want you to notice what took place, because this apparently was more than just inconvenience and work. I mean, they're going to have to lift a guy out of a well, but it doesn't take 30 men to lift a man out of a well. Why 30 men? That might indicate to you that there was risk involved. These men wanted Jeremiah dead. And now who's going to go down there and just pull him out? Well, they would do so probably at risk with their own lives. And so the king says, you can take 30 men with you. And that makes it maybe a little more safe. And they pull this man out of this dungeon. We need to be like him in that respect as well. James 2 says, what happens when someone comes and knocks on your door and says, man, I am naked and I have nothing. And I'm hungry. Can you help me? And he says, what if you say to that man, be warmed and filled and go your way, but you do nothing? And by the way, folks, that passage is not written to Christians so that we have a passage to defeat the doctrine of faith only. That is not a passage that is written to defeat denominational dogmas. That passage is written to Christians. He's not talking about people that don't believe you have to be baptized. He's talking to people that are, who are Christians, and he says to these Christians, listen, if you don't exercise your faith, if you who have already been baptized will not lift a finger to help those who are needy, your faith will not save you. And so that touches home. That chapter in chapter 2 is not about the denominational world. It's about me and how I live out my faith in Christ Jesus. His concern led him to action. It's like the Good Samaritan, you know, the priest and the Levite, they see it and injustice has been done, but they don't have time for it. And they just walk around. And so many people do that in life. They just avoid the trouble, avoid the inconvenience, avoid the injustices. Or we see them, we can point them out and say, yep, that's what that is. That's an injustice. But who will be the one to say, I want to get involved? Count on me to help. That's who Ebed-Melech was, and that's who we need to be. And then I want to bring out one more point about this man, and it's found in verse 12, that Ebed-Melech said, put these old clothes and rags under your armpits, under the ropes. And Jeremiah did so, and then they pulled him out. Here's the point that I want to get across there. Ebed-Melech went the second mile. You see, what's it take to pull a man out of a pit? Well, you got a rope. Sounds good. You got enough men to pull him out. Sounds good. Well, then pull him out. No, wait. Jeremiah or Ebed-Melech said, no, here's what else I'm going to do. Somebody gather up a bunch of clothes, and we'll throw those down there too, and tell him to put those rags, those cloths, under his armpits so that when we pull him up with the rope, he won't get rope burns. You know, that'd be uncomfortable. He's already sunk in the mud a little bit, and I'm sure it's going to take some pulling. And so, you know, he would have had those that rash, that rope burn. And so Ebed-Melech goes beyond the call of duty, beyond what was necessary. And he said, let's go ahead and get some cloths and just go the second mile and make it more comfortable for him. We need to be people who go the second mile. Isn't that what Jesus taught in the Sermon on the Mount? He said, if a man compels you to go 1 mile with him, go two. And the background of that command is that in the first century, a Roman foot soldier carrying this big, heavy backpack with all of his supplies and everything, he could just come up to some farmer who's working in his farm and say, hey, listen, you carry my bag for a mile. And they had to do it. Can you imagine how angry that would make you? You don't want them in your territory anyway. They're an invading force. And you're offended by their presence, and now you have to leave your farm and pick up this heavy bag and walk a mile, and then you have to walk a mile back. So you have a 2 mile inconvenience because of this guy you don't really even appreciate all that much. With respect to that, this is what Jesus was saying. When a guy compels you to go a mile with him, well, go, but I want you to go 2. And can't you see the purpose? What do you think would happen? When you got to the end of the mile, that soldier says, okay, give me my stuff. And then the man says, no, that's all right. I'll go another mile with you. You don't have to go another mile with me. Give me my stuff. No, I want to go another mile with you. Do you know what that soldier would have probably said? Why? And boy, what an opening. I mean, you've got the natural opening. Because I'm a disciple of a man named Jesus. And you talk about Jesus. Now, that meant he had 4 miles to travel in all. But it gave him an opportunity for somebody to learn about Jesus. We can go the second mile with people. And that second mile will be what opens the doors for us. You know, when we just do what everybody else does and what everybody else expects other people to do, there's nothing spectacular. But when you go the extra mile, people take notice and they begin to ask questions and they open the door for you to introduce Jesus into the conversation. I've shared this with you before, but it's just this simple. A man was at a car wash. He was a member of the church. He's at a car wash, and as he was walking, he had just gotten a bunch of change, and he's walking back to his stall. And as he passed one of the stalls, the car was still all sudded up, and he wasn't done yet, but that thing started beeping, you know, 10, 9, 8. He was about to run out of his coins. And so the man who was the Christian just put about 3 or 4 quarters in there and then just walked on to his stall. It stunned the man that was washing his car. He just stopped and stared at him. And he said, when I finished washing my car, that man was still there. And he came over to me and he said, why did you put money in my stall? And he just said, well, I was walking by, I heard it dinging, and I saw that you weren't done yet, so I just put a couple quarters in so you could finish it off. And he said, yeah, but why? And the man said, because I'm a disciple of Jesus, and I just want to go about doing good. And that led the man to say, where do you go to church? And he told him, and he said, I'm going to come and visit you all. It was that simple. No big theological discussion, no debate about religion and the Bible and what it teaches. And this man just simply went the second mile, and it opened doors of opportunity. And folks, it will for us today. Let's look for ways that we can be like Ebed-Melech and not just do what is our duty to do, but go above and beyond. Follow the instruction and principle that Jesus set forth. Go the second mile with people, and it will open doors that whereby we can reach them. Now, that's all we read about Ebed-Melech. Well, we do look in chapter 39, and as Jeremiah is released from his prison, the word of the Lord comes to Jeremiah, and he says, I want you to go tell Ebed-Melech something. I want you to tell him that in the day of destruction, when this place is going to be ransacked and people are going to lose their lives left and right, you tell him that I promise him he will not die. His life will be spared. He won't die by the sword. And the reason is because you trusted me. Listen. This isn't just an obscure person that has no bearing on anything. This is an unlikely hero of the faith. This man saw an injustice, and he was bold and took a risk and spoke up in defense of what is right. And he got outside of himself, and he reached out and went the second mile, and he involved himself as a part of the solution. And God said, I know there's been such wickedness that there needs to be destruction, but for you, I'll spare you. Because I am so taken back by your faith. You're worthy of rescue. I want us to be, you know, we can't do what he did with reference to a prophet of God. But every one of those things that illustrate in principle the things, the characteristics he had going for him, we can be all of those things. And we too can be spared in the day of judgment if we will have the faith of this unlikely hero, Ebed-Melech. If you're here this morning and you're not yet a child of God, why don't you obey the gospel? Faith in him will get God's attention, and he will reward those who place their faith in him, as he did Ebed-Melech. If you're a child of God already but unfaithful and you need to come back, we'll pray with you to that end. Whether it's to be baptized into Christ this morning or to receive the prayers of your brethren, we invite you to come as we stand and sing this song.